You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. We talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode is going to be a solo episode and a Q&A where I've pooled questions from my Instagram and my Snapchat. Hopefully you enjoyed Friday's episode with Siobhan. And every Friday for the foreseeable, I'm going to have a different guest on in the area of health, wellness, fitness, and in all those areas of life. I've got a couple of awesome guests lined up. So I'm really, really looking forward to hearing the feedback on how you're finding the Friday interviews. And I've been personally having a ball chatting to and recording with some great people and just picking their brain, what makes them tick, their morning routines, their habits, their misconceptions that they had when they started off. It's just been awesome. So I hope you're all getting as much value listening as I did when I was recording. So today's episode is going to be a Q&A. So my Instagram is Brian Keane Fitness and my Snapchat BrianK019. So at the end of this episode, if you're not following those platforms, they're where I take the majority of my questions for the podcast. There's an option on my new website, BrianKeaneFitness.com, where you can send in questions on there too. But I'm pooling most of them from my Instagram DMs, my Instagram live Q&As, and my Snapchat Q&As. So be sure to check those out at the end of this episode. Okay, first question comes in from Anonymous. What is the best alcohol to drink when trying to lose fat? So I'm going to answer this from a couple of different angles because you can lose body fat consuming alcohol, particularly if it's not every day and it's at the weekend, you're having a few glasses of wine or you're even going out once a week. But is it optimal for losing body fat? Probably not. So the truth is, it's going to be finding what works best for you and then making certain alcoholic drink choices that may help you achieve your goal of losing body fat faster and kind of giving you the best of both worlds. I spoke in my book, The Fitness Mindset, in the alcohol section that what happens when you consume alcohol is your body tends to use it as its primary source of energy when there's alcohol in your system. So the majority of people that aren't in a ketogenic diet or in a ketogenic state will use glucose, which is just carbohydrate, as your main energy source. What happens with alcohol is it jumps to the front of the queue, and your body, when there's alcohol in your system, will use that as the primary energy source. So if you've ever gone for a run or a training session or played a match or done anything in the gym the day after a night out where you've consumed several drinks, you can feel like you're sweating alcohol. And you kind of are because your body is using it as its primary fuel source. So I spoke in the book and there's a section in there, a little bit of a table, and this is broken down into its most simplified version. Be sure to check out that section in the book to expand on this more. But in its most simplified version, we've got our glucose, which is the carbohydrate we've eaten that day. We've got our glycogen, the carbohydrate we've eaten over the last couple of days. We've got our fat stores, which is the fat in our body. And then we've got our alcohol at the end. And when you drink alcohol, it goes right to the front of the queue and it just adds another figurative wall that you need to jump over in order to get to your fat stores. So the reason that it's not that supportive when you're trying to lose body fat is that you have to burn through that alcohol in your system before you even get back onto that glucose, glycogen, body fat chain where your body is burning through your energy sources and getting into your fat stores faster. So it can potentially slow down your progress or slow down your body's ability to lose body fat and get you to where you want to be faster. But that being said, when you factor it in, there's a couple of things you can do to minimize the negative effects that alcohol has on your body and that can help you get you back on track faster. One is obviously choosing lower calorie alcohol, because at the end of the day, the calories matter, your calories in and calories out. And I'm going to speak later on in this episode about not all calories being created equal, but in the context of alcoholic calories, you're better off saving your actual calorie intake for the day with clear spirits and lower calorie spirits that are going to potentially reduce the amount of overall calories you take in that day. For example, if you get a clear spirit like a Bacardi or a vodka with a diet mixer, you're going to have 60, 70, 80 calories in that shot, depending on the size, compared to a pint of beer or a pint of cider that could potentially be 200 or 300 calories. And when you add up 5 or 6 vodkas and diet mixers with 5 or 6 pints of cider or pints of beer, there's a significant amount of higher calories that you're consuming with beer and cider. So just from a pure numerical point of view on calories in, calories out, choosing lower calorie alcoholic drinks can potentially help you. The other tip that I would offer in terms of making those alcoholic choices that have lower calories is not letting your nutrition fall off track when you're drinking. Now, one of the things that happens that anyone that's ever drank alcoholic drink or been drunk or been plastered, in the case that I've done many times, you know that your inhibitions drop. And we all make bad choices when our inhibitions drop. For some people, it looks very different to others. But in the case of, in context of food, you tend to have lower inhibitions, and the pizza or the fast food or the food the following day when you're feeling hungover and your serotonin, your dopamine and your happy hormones are downregulated because you haven't dropped into deep REM sleep. Alcohol can stop your body dropping into deep restorative sleep, which is your REM, rapid eye movement sleep. So you don't tend to feel that refreshed and recovered the following day after a night out. So what can happen is when your inhibitions are lowered or your serotonin is lowered and you don't feel that good, you make poor food choices. That's where you can really fall off track. The people that I work with in my online programs, and I have a lot of people coming through, particularly some college students in my GA Lean Body program, where we factor in the alcohol every week. It's just making sure that we don't fall off track with nutrition as a result of going out, having a good night out. Because when you make those food choices, that's what can really set you back. When you have things like your processed foods or your fast food, your trans fatty acids in particular, which are probably the only thing on the planet that I can't argue a positive side for. Trans fatty acids are poison to the body. And I love the Charlie Munger quote that you shouldn't argue a point on something unless you can argue the opposite side better than the people who hold that side or hold that opinion on that side. But trans fatty acids are probably the only one that I struggle to make any pro for. The only positive I could potentially make for a trans fatty acid, which is basically just a upside down hydrogen ion, if you see the chemical makeup of a fatty acid and your body doesn't understand what it is, it's poison to your body. And it, the only positive I could potentially make is if you were staying on track with your nutrition all week and that Chinese or pizza or fast food that you have every Saturday or Sunday night keeps you on track all week and it's improving your adherence during the week, then you could definitely factor it in. But when you combine the likes of those foods with regular alcohol consumption, it's really going to slow down your body's ability to get into your fat stores and change your body composition quicker than you like, then change your body composition quicker than if you weren't making those choices with food, combining it with alcohol regularly. So what I would advise is understand that you can factor in your alcohol when, as long as your nutrition doesn't fall off and you end up letting go completely. And I am speaking from personal experience. I remember when I used to go out on a Saturday night, I would go out and have 8-9 drinks on a Saturday night, and then the following day I'd be so tired and my energy levels and my mood would be so low, I would end up eating ice cream and chocolate all day just to try and bring my mood up. And then on Monday I feel horrible, you feel sluggish, you feel watery, you feel bloated. And then it wasn't until Tuesday or Wednesday before I started to come back right again. My food would go back on track to what I was normally eating and I was back training properly and my energy levels had improved again. You can hijack that by not letting your food fall off track. So in terms of what alcohol to choose, lower calorie options, in terms of what food choices to make, don't let your food fall off just because you're feeling horrible or your inhibitions have dropped because you've been drunk on a Saturday night. And you can minimize the negative effects of alcohol in your body by keeping your nutritional plan and keeping it in alignment with your normal goals, and then keeping your training program and not letting that suffer. So again, another little hack that you can use is if you know you're not going to be able to train on a Sunday because you're hungover, do your hardest training session on a Saturday, do your next hardest training session on a Monday when you're back on track again. And that can, again, another percentile that, or percentage that could potentially reduce the negative effect that alcohol could have on your body. And again, life's for living. So if you need to balance that in and you want to have alcohol every weekend, or, you know, on your Wednesday or Thursday for your student nights, and you still want to lose body fat, you can do that. Just don't let your nutrition fall off. Choose lower calorie drinks and make sure that you don't let your routine completely fall off just because the weekend came around and you had a few drinks. So that's kind of more the mindset around it, as opposed to that all or nothing where, well, I've had my drinks now, I feel horrible, I'm going to eat what I want on a Sunday. You feel rotten on a Monday and you're not back on track till Tuesday, because you can hack that by keeping your nutrition good. Keep it high quality foods on your Sunday. You know, have a free meal by all means on that Sunday night. Try and keep it 80% during the day, and then have your tub of Ben and Jerry's or have your meal, homemade pizza that you make that Sunday night, and then back on track first thing Monday, and you'll massively minimize the negative effects that alcohol will have on your fat loss goals. Next question comes in from Callum Henry7 on Snapchat. What are good foods to eat to bulk up? So to bulk up, again, comes down to your overall calories that you eat, and that you need to eat more calories than your body is burning. So in order to bulk up, again, your training program is going to be based around building size. So you're probably going to be working in a slightly lower rep range. You're probably going to be working for 6, 7, 8, maybe 10 reps if you want to go on the higher end of hypertrophy. Your 60 to 90 second rest, your 3 to 4 sets, or possibly more sets depending on the body part. A lot of compound movements, your squats, bench, deadlift, military press, your movement patterns that are going to require you to use a lot of different muscles that could potentially help you bulk up in a training sense. But in order to get enough calories to bulk up, there are a couple of foods that you can add in that can make it a little bit easier. So one of the things that people struggle with, and I remember myself when I was 18, 19, trying to bulk up for the first time, I was trying to do it with super clean carbohydrate and protein foods that were swelling my stomach because I wasn't able to eat that much of those foods because there was so much fiber in them. I was trying to eat more rice, I was trying to eat more chicken, and you have to eat a lot of chicken and rice in order to get your 3 or 4 or even 5,000 calories in some cases for people. You gotta eat a lot of chicken and rice to do that. So one of the things that I would focus on if you're trying to bulk up is more calorie dense foods, which basically means that you need to eat less food but you get more calories. So things like your nuts, your natural nut butters, your oils, factoring these into your nutritional strategy can massively help you get your calories in and bulk you and get improve your body's ability to bulk up, because you're not eating as much food but you're still getting the calories that your body needs. So for example, your natural nut butter, natural cashew butter, natural almond butter, your olive oil, your coconut oil, your avocado oil, your healthy fats from your avocado that you may be eating, your oily salmon, your oily fish in general, your red meat, these foods that you're getting higher calories but you don't have to actually have to eat that much of them. So what I would advise, as opposed to consistently eating the foods that we know work for helping us bulk up, and by all means, chicken and rice can help you bulk up. And I use that example because it's the one that normally pops up on Instagram, or the one that pops up on magazines, or the one that pops up on ads on eat chicken and rice, and you see bodybuilders and these jacked powerlifters eating these foods, and they're doing a post-workout because it'll definitely help replenish glycogen and can help support you in bulking up. But the rest of the day, they're probably eating more calorie-dense foods to keep their calories higher. There is a program, and I'm not sure, Colin, if you're a GA player, but even if you're not, I've put a sample of one of my weight-gaining shakes from my GA Lean Body program in the GA Lean Body Guide, which is on my website, briankeenfitness.com. It's a free guide for any GA players on there who can't afford my program or who want a guide on what to do. I've made that guide on there. It's general, it's not specific for each person like the GA Lean Body program, but what it is a lot of general tips that can help people. And I have a sample of my weight gainer on there, which is different 100 grams of oats, 2-3 tablespoons of natural peanut butter, and different oils that you can add, and a couple of scoops of protein that's going to bring you up to 1,000 calories. And it's a homemade shake. It's going to cost you very little in terms of the ingredients aren't expensive, and you're going to be able to add one or two of those in a day, which automatically gives you 1 or 2,000 calories a day that you can add in on top of your meals. That brings up your calorie count very, very quickly and can make it a lot easier for you to bulk up. So by all means, if bulking up is something that you're looking to do, regardless of whether you're a GA player or not, check out that weight gaining shake. Head over to the website, download the guide and just skip forward to the part on the weight gaining shake if you want that specific ingredient list, how to blend it up and what to add, and hopefully that will help you. But the key takeaway for bulking up and the best good foods or best foods are going to be your calorie dense foods. Just make sure that you're eating enough calories, make sure you're getting enough protein in order to grow, make sure you're replenishing your glycogen stores after you train, your carbohydrates and complex carbohydrates, and make sure you're eating a good quality healthy fats that you don't have to eat that much of to get a lot of calories. Okay, next question comes in from Snapchat. What is the best cardio machine to lose body fat? So I'm going to approach this from a couple of angles because there are definitely cardio machines that are going to help you lose body fat and some are better than others, but they may not be the best one for you to factor into your plan. One of the things that I used to struggle with when I started personal training, particularly one-to-one in the gym back when I was doing that first, was when people would come into the gym and do 45 minutes on the cross trainer and their body would never respond and they'd never change and they would constantly question why their body wasn't changing. And one of the reasons for that is, again, one is an adaptation. If you come into the gym and do the same thing every day for 6 months, regardless if it's the best program in the world, your body's eventually going to adapt and you're not going to respond. You need to change the stimulus in some way. That can be from either changing the weights, changing the reps, changing the intensity, changing the level, changing something. But you have to change things minimally probably every 6 weeks in order for your body to continually respond. Again, it varies person to person, but you got to change things up in some way, shape or form. And what I would advise is the best cardio machine to lose body fat is going to be the one that you find difficult, but you also don't hate doing. So my only issue with, say, a cross trainer is it's a very easy movement pattern to do. And even at the highest level and the most intensity level, it's not that difficult of a machine. Even for someone, unless you're chronically obese starting the gym for the first time, your body will respond by doing that because you've gone from doing nothing to doing a cross trainer. You will definitely respond for a few weeks. But if you've been training in a gym for 2 years and you're using the cross trainer every day, your body's probably not going to respond as fast as someone that's never done anything before. However, if you go onto a treadmill or a rower, they're harder movements. Running on a treadmill is significantly harder than moving a cross trainer. Rowing for intensity on a rower is significantly harder than moving on a cross trainer. Again, I'll use that as the context because it's the one that people tend to gravitate towards. And I'm not saying that it's a bad machine because you can definitely change around the patterns on it. And in my online program, I have cross trainer is an option on there. We've got different systems in there, different 30-30 for high intensity, different sprint sessions, and different low intensity steady state versions. So it is a great machine that you can use if you've got your nutritional in alignment with what it is you're trying to achieve. You've got your own training program where you're creating enough resistance on the muscle to tear the fibers down and elevate your metabolism. And then you're adding it in as the icing on the cake. But if I have to choose a piece of cardio equipment to lose body fat, it's going to be the one that you struggle with and find it difficult, but you still enjoy doing it. So for example, depending on the type of cardio you're doing, and I'll use HIIT, high intensity interval training, and I'll use LISS, low intensity steady state cardio, as the point of reference because they're the two main types of systems, even though there are others, but they're the two that people tend to gravitate towards. HIIT is your sprints. So again, whatever way you break it up, Tabata, 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off, or 30-30, 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off, or you do low intensity steady state where you're working at 70% of your maximum heart rate, which is quote unquote your fat burning zone, with 220 minus your age is your fat burning zone, 70% of your maximum heart rate. The machine you use is going to very much depend on the systems that you're applying. If you're doing a high intensity interval training, it's a lot harder to use a treadmill for that. It's a lot easier to use a rower for that piece of, or for that system of cardio training. If you're doing a low intensity steady state, it's a lot easier to do a 20 minute jog on a treadmill. So you may use different cardio machines depending on the type of cardio you're actually doing, whether you're doing low intensity or whether you're doing high intensity. In terms of the best cardio machine, there's so many other factors that come into play. Your nutrition, making sure that you're in a calorie deficit is going to be key. Using good quality whole foods that your body's able to get all the vitamins and minerals it needs in order to keep your energy levels high. The rest of your training program, so the resistance plan you're following, whether that's body weight resistance or with weights or with a TRX or with kettlebells. And then your cardio is that small icing on the cake, that last 10-15% that can definitely help you, but it's not going to be the thing that determines whether you lose body fat or not, unless you're a beginner at the very, very start of your journey where you've gone from doing nothing to doing something, which effectively will put you into a deficit in lots of cases and can change your body composition and help you lose body fat as a result. But what I would advise when you're choosing your cardio machine is first decide on the system you're doing, whether you're doing high intensity or low intensity, and then find one that you struggle with enough that you're able to get your body to respond. If you're on a cross trainer for the last 3 months and your body fat hasn't dropped a pound or hasn't dropped an inch or hasn't dropped a percent, it may be worth changing it up now. It may be worth trying something else with your nutrition or trying something else with your training or even just switching up your cardio machine so that your body gets a change of stimulus. So choose your cardio machine based on the system you're applying. Make sure it's one that you struggle with in a good way, so not the struggle where you've got knee pain or ankle pain on a treadmill, but you're struggling with in terms of you're pushing your body to 70% of its maximum heart rate in a low intensity state, or you're pushing a sprint high intensity interval where you can't breathe for your 9 out of 10 and you're fully recovering for your rest period. So my personal preference is always going to be a version of a bike, a rower, or a treadmill, purely because my body responds well to those stimulus types of cardio. My body fat will drop if I run on a treadmill for steady state. My body fat will drop if I do 30-30 on a rower. My body fat will drop if I do 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off for 4 minutes for Tabata on a bike, provided that my nutrition is in alignment with that. I know my body responds to those pieces of machine. I can go on a cross trainer for 3 hours and my body never responds. So find what works best for you. Find the one that you enjoy, the one that your body responds to, and then base your choice around the system you're using, and then double down on the ones that work, and then just change up the systems. If you love high intensity, there's so many variations of that you can do. If you love low intensity, where you're working for 70% of your heart rate, then by all means, change up the angle you're doing it. Walk on an incline on a treadmill or do a jog. You can hit that 70% to different angles and different levels and systems on the machine. So play around with it, and then the one that works and your body's responding to, then double down on it and use that as your best cardio machine to lose body fat. Okay, next question comes in from Neve de Bruin on Instagram. What are your thoughts on all calories being equal, not equal? Or for example, there was a Toblerone in my office today and I had some of it instead of one of my snacks to keep my calorie count at the 1500 mark. I know it wouldn't have been as good for my macro wise as my healthy clean snack, but interested in learning more about it. Okay, so this is one of these that very much comes down to what's going to work for each individual person. In terms of the school of thought on all calories being equal, not equal, I tend to hold the opinion that it's very hard to argue that all calories are equal, and it kind of comes from that school of thought of IIFYM, which is if it fits your macros. And that is kind of the thought process that it doesn't matter where your carbs, protein, or fats come from. As long as you hit your numbers each day, it doesn't matter whether you got them from chocolate and Pop-Tarts or whether you got them from chicken and broccoli. In terms of the nutritional digestion of how that would be absorbed and how it would work on your body, I think it's very hard to argue that you're probably not going to get the same amount of energy and the same nutritional return eating chocolate and Pop-Tarts as you are, say, chicken and broccoli, for example. That being said, in this context, I think it's more flexible dieting in terms of that thought process of flexible dieting is where you keep yourself on track. I love, it's very much Pareto principle on 80-20, that 80% of your diet is clean and then 20% is a lot looser and then you fit it into your macros. I personally think that's a really good nutritional strategy to follow for people who do well with moderation. So for example, I've got people that come through my online program where we literally have them having chocolate every single day, a small amount, because that's what allows them to stay on track and adhere to the nutritional strategy long term. And if you're somebody that really struggles with either cravings or really thinks you need to have a small bit of chocolate or sugar or whatever it is every single day, then you find out what your nutritional calorie intake needs to be, you know what your macros are, and then you factor it in. For certain proportion of people listening, that's going to work incredibly well for you. And over the long term, you're going to get better results because you're going to be able to stick to it. The best nutritional plan you'll get is one that includes foods that you enjoy, that's in alignment with your goals, and that fits into your lifestyle and schedule, and one that you can stick to. And in the case of the Toblerone in the office, that may be the thing. Having a small amount of Toblerone or a small chocolate bar every single day and doing flexible dieting is keeping you on track, and you factor it into your macros. In terms of all calories being equal, it's very, very hard to argue that side, that your body's going to have the same response in terms of the vitamins and minerals. Like, you're just not going to get the nutritional return from Pop-Tarts. And I use Pop-Tarts as an example because in the IIFYM community, the If It Fits Your Macros community, Pop-Tarts is kind of the food that's used as the symbolic food for IIFYM, because the thought process is that if you've got calories left over at the end of the day, you can fit a Pop-Tart in there and it's going to be fine. And again, by all means, for the 80-20, if that's the strategy you're following and it's keeping you on track, then definitely do that and double down on it, because that strategy is going to work for you. But it comes back to the thought philosophy of don't fool yourself and you're the easiest person to fool. And if you're eating only chocolate and Pop-Tarts and crappy food, but it's fitting into your macros, your body compositional change is not going to be the same as if you're getting those same amount of calories from healthier, cleaner, quality, higher quality foods. So for example, if you're trying to hit 1500 calories and you're making up your calorie intake from sugary foods, processed foods, pizzas, protein bars, and you're hitting your macros through those foods, and you've got somebody else or even another you who's eating 1500 calories from good quality complex carbohydrates, lots of vegetables, fruits, good complete protein sources, good healthy fats, the body compositional change on those two people are going to be completely different. The energy levels are going to be completely different. The person eating the high quality foods with that packs a higher nutritional punch is going to have higher quality energy. They're going to feel better. They're going to have better training sessions than the person who's eating crappy foods doing that. By all means, on a scale, your weight may drop because you're in a deficit on both, but losing weight and losing body fat aren't inherently the same thing. Losing weight is when the numbers on a scale reduce. Losing body fat is when the fat in your body reduces. So be very, very aware that somewhere in the middle and an 80-20 approach to that can work very, very well for people. But don't fool yourself into thinking that, well, if I hit my protein, hit my carbs, hit my fat with these crappy foods, and as long as I hit those numbers, I'm going to look the way I want to look and feel the way I want to feel. It's very unlikely that you will, because your energy levels will be slumped. Your body composition probably won't change as quickly. Your training output won't be as good as if you were getting it from higher quality foods. In the case of the Toblerone in the office, that sounds more 80-20 and flexible dieting to me, and that can work tremendously well for a lot of people. As I said, I've had people I've worked with do that every single day, and that's allowed them to adhere to the nutritional strategy long term, and it's setting them up for success. And as a result, they're able to train harder, they're able to train more consistently, they're able to feel better, their energy levels are better, and as a result, they can stick with it long term. So by all means, try it. Play around with what's going to work best for you. I'm a big fan of 80-20 for a certain personality type that feels they do well with moderation. Other extreme personality types don't do as well with that. Personally, I'm not great with moderation. I prefer to be super clean and then be a lot more lenient. But again, reverse engineer your own personality type and what works best for you, and then double down on the things that are working. Okay, next question comes in from Anonymous. Thoughts on using legal steroids online? So I'm going to expand on this one because I actually had to ask about this. So this came in on my Snapchat Q&A a couple of weeks ago, and I answered and got a lot of screenshots from it. So I'm going to flesh it out here on the podcast because I know I've got a different audience on here. And legal steroids online are effectively where you can go online and you can order different steroids, apparently, that have been made probably in someone's kitchen, that you can order on a website online. So again, disclaimer, not saying to go online and order steroids, and hopefully after I answer this question, you're probably not gonna wanna do it anyways. But disclaimer for people that didn't know that was out there, I'm not suggesting that you even do the research and Google on it. You can, but hopefully how I answer this particular question will probably deter you from just a little bit of inside knowledge on the fitness industry that I have. So firstly, steroids aren't illegal in Ireland and the UK. If you're listening to this in the US, and I know that I have a lot of downloads from the US, particularly in the last couple of months with a few features that I've had, they're illegal in the US to possess. They're not illegal in Ireland and the UK to possess. They're illegal to sell or distribute. So if you try and sell steroids, that's illegal, but they're not illegal to possess. So in terms of buying legal steroids online, they're not illegal to buy. It's just you can't go in and buy them over the counter in places. You normally get them from some backhand dealer or whatever it is, whatever the process is offline. However, to buy legal steroids online, they're probably made in somebody's kitchen. And one of the analogies that I used in the Snapchat Q&A that I did is, if you were lying sick in bed and had a horrible sickness, would you go online to get medicine or would you go to a doctor? And that's effectively what you're doing with legal steroids. When you are buying something online, like steroids, for example, you are, one, putting your faith and trust in somebody that you don't know. And there's a high probability that what you get is either going to be fake and it's going to be just paracetamol or something like that along those lines, if you're lucky. And worst case scenario could be fucking rat poison that someone has made in their kitchen. You don't know. These things are not FDA approved. They've not been shown to be health and safe. They're shown to have been made in a lab where they're safe and they can be used. Because steroids as such are not inherently bad for your body. It's just that when they're used for performance enhancing, they're seen as taboo in certain sports and for people to use, and they're negative in terms of their health. Testosterone is used for guys and older men who have low testosterone in their body. TRT is testosterone replacement therapy. It's when you're putting back in the reduced, or putting back in an exogenous form of testosterone to bring back a balanced level. Things like your Anavar, for example, which is a popular recreational drug, was used for AIDS victims to help preserve muscle for people that have HIV and AIDS. So a lot of these steroids are used medicinally. They're prescribed medicinally. But when you buy something online, you don't know what the fuck you're getting. That could be anything that's in that. And again, supplements to a degree are very, very similar, because you don't have to have an FDA approved supplement. Some will be, but some supplement with a skull on the front or some crazy fucking name that you can only buy through, you know, a back channel Reddit website that is like, well, this is the most powerful pre-workout you'd use. It's got amphetamines and all these different ingredients. They haven't been approved by the FDA. They haven't been approved by anybody. So they can cause your body more harm than the way off and the benefit of actually using it for an improved workout. Steroids online are the exact same. So what I would advise is, next time you even consider ordering legal steroids online, understand first that steroids aren't illegal to possess, and then understand that you're possibly ordering something that's been made in somebody's kitchen. In the best case scenario, it's some crushed up paracetamol that you're getting, or some ingredient that's not going to be harmful for your body. But in a lot of cases, you are playing Russian roulette with the stuff you're ordering online. Again, as I said, best case scenario, it's something that just has no effect on your body and you just have a lighter wallet as a result. But worst case scenario, you're putting something into your body that could potentially be seriously harmful. And just picture, if you were lying in bed sick and needed an antibiotic from a doctor, would you go online and order an antibiotic? That's the same thing that you're doing here. So that's my thoughts on using legal steroids online. Hopefully that clears up the legality issues. It's a disclaimer. I'm not saying to use any form of steroids. I'm not pro or anti steroids. I think I'm uneducated on using it to look good in a club because of all the health implications that can come with it. I think it's fucking stupid. However, if you're a professional bodybuilder or a professional powerlifter, it's one of these things that kind of comes in with the territory. I spoke about this in another podcast episode on Real Talk Steroids when I was in the fitness industry and some of the things that I saw myself. But I'm not pro or anti steroids. Each to their own, make your own choice on it. But I am anti knowledge on it, realizing that your potential pros and cost benefit, if you do a cost benefit analysis on your cost, your actual negative effects that it could have on your health to look good in a club, and all the negative effects on your endocrinology, your actual endocrine system, your body's ability to naturally produce, say, testosterone, and all these horrible negative effects that it can have on your actual libido, on your health, on your hormones, compared to the benefit of adding a couple of kilos of muscle. Personally, I don't think that they outweigh one another. I think the cons are significantly outweighed by the pros. But again, if you're a professional bodybuilder or a professional powerlifter, it can come with that territory. But just understand, a lot of the powerlifters and bodybuilders that you see are probably getting it prescribed by a doctor, or probably getting it prescribed by somebody, that so that what they're getting is exactly what it's supposed to be. It's used with people in medical trials. It's used and has been created and made in laboratories and is what it's supposed to be. When you get something online like that, it can be made in somebody's kitchen. So just be very, very aware of that before you even consider buying anything online in that area. And hopefully that helps. Okay, next question, another one from Anonymous. There's a girl I like who's always texting and flirting with me, but she has a boyfriend. Am I just being strung along? So this is a really, really difficult one to answer, because from the outside, it's very, very easy to see what's going on. And sometimes we can't see the forest amongst the trees when we're in a situation ourselves. And in a lot of cases, if I had a euro for every time I talked to somebody and they said that if I could take my own advice, I'd have a lot more successful life, because they're so good at offering advices to their friends when they're having problems with their boyfriend, or having problems with their girlfriend, or having problems with relationships, or whatever it is. And that comes down to our emotional attachment when it involves us. And we get very clouded because we're not able to pull ourselves out of it and look at the situation objectively. So it's very, very easy for me from the outside to see what's going on in the situation. And I've heard and seen the situation over and over again. The only thing that changes are the names. And what happens in this situation sometimes, and I'm going to offer a couple of different vantage points on here, because depending on whoever else is listening to this, we've all been in this situation or in some form of this situation where we're into a guy or a girl that are already in a relationship and they're showing us attention, or they're being really nice or flirty with us, and we're kind of questioning, should we do something about it? Should we not do anything because they're in a relationship? Should we wait until they break up and then pursue it? Or what should we do? So one of the first things that springs out of me here is, normally when a girl or a guy, particularly, but girls are tend to be, from my experience, a little bit worse with this. When a girl is going out with a guy and she's not showing him the attention in the relationship that she wants, she tends to project it elsewhere and looks for the attention from somebody else. And this is normally projected in one of two ways. One, it's because of her own insecurity that her own boyfriend or partner isn't giving her, and this can go for, unfortunately, for husbands and wives and fiancés as well. And normally when she's not getting enough attention from her partner, she'll seek it elsewhere for one of two reasons. One, she is looking for to plaster over her own insecurity on why her partner isn't giving her the attention. Or two, she's looking to make her partner jealous. If she's physically flirting and interacting with you or other guys when her boyfriend's there, sometimes she's just looking for a reaction to show that he cares. And I've offered this, and again, I'm not a relationship guru by any stretch, but I understand human psychology, and I understand how easy it is to offer an opinion and a perspective from the outside, and hopefully what I offer here will provide you with value. And knowing that, in a lot of cases when a girl does that, it's normally one of those two things. She either isn't getting the attention from her boyfriend or her partner and wants it elsewhere because it makes her feel good, or she is looking to make him jealous and again show that he cares. So you got to watch out for how it's showing up here. Is it showing up in private and she may just feel good because you're paying her attention and she's not getting that at home, or if she's doing it publicly, maybe to get a response from him? So you got to watch out for that. The other thing that I would watch out for here is, you have to ask yourself, if you're into this girl, and again, there's deeper psychological things that may be going on here, you have to ask yourself that if you're into this girl and if she is paying you all this attention and texting you and flirting with you and you don't know if it's going to come anywhere or go anywhere, you have to ask yourself, is that the kind of girl that you want to be with? Because you got to remember, she's going out with somebody, she has a boyfriend, and she's literally doing all these things behind his back. And normally, again, to some degree, leopards can change their spots, but in 99 of 100 times, they generally don't. And how we've been in the past is normally a pretty good indicator of how we'll be in the future, unless we hijack it along the way and we have the self-awareness, or we find something in ourselves that allows us to change the trajectory of our path. But in most cases, it's a good indicator of how we behave in the future. So you have to ask yourself one of two things. If this girl left her boyfriend as well, was with you, and in some cases it may be that he was just being a bad boyfriend and wasn't paying her the attention, or she wasn't communicating the way she was feeling with him, and as a result that relationship was never bound to work, and maybe you were supposed to be with her. But you also have to ask yourself the question, if she's willing to do that now with her boyfriend and text you and flirt with you and do all these things behind his back, you have to ask the question, what's going to stop her doing that with you if you stop showing her attention for a couple of weeks? So I would pull the curtain back on that and realize that when you are constantly texting or flirting with somebody who is in a relationship or in a marriage or is engaged or whatever it is, and your opportunity cost of thought, your actual thoughts are your thinking time that I spoke about in my book, your actual thinking time is consumed with thinking about this person where there's potentially nothing going to happen with them. Every second you spend thinking about what you should do in that situation is 1 second that you're not thinking about how you can actually be happier with somebody that is meant to be for you. And it's an opportunity cost of thought. So an opportunity cost is an economics term that when we give up one thing, we can't do something else. In economics terms, is if you buy a can of Coke for a euro, it means you can't buy a bar of chocolate for a euro. In this context, it means that every second you're spending thinking about this situation is a second that you're not thinking about the relationship that you genuinely do want to be within and the kind of girl that you do want to be with. So you got to ask yourself those questions. And the truth is, nobody can make that decision. Nobody can tell you what to do. Nobody can make you see it any differently or offer anything other than an opinion or perspective from the outside. But what I would offer is, sometimes when you've made the decision, and if you do make the decision that, look, this girl is stringing me along, which sounds like you've already kind of leaned that direction from the wording of the question, normally cutting yourself off completely and not just texting every couple of days or seeing her occasionally, sometimes you're better to go cold turkey and just tell her, look, I'm not interested anymore, I don't want to talk to you anymore, you have a boyfriend, I don't want to hang out anymore. And sometimes you're better just to cut it completely cold turkey. By all means, you may go the other way and realize that, you know, this is the kind of girl you want to be with and she's in the wrong relationship, or you feel she shouldn't be with her boyfriend, she should be with you. Then again, lay your cards on the table if that's the case, and then you'll really see where she's feeling. Because if she tells you, okay, I'm going to break up with my boyfriend, I want to be with you, then by all means, maybe there's something there. But my gut tells me that she likes the attention that you give her that she may not be getting elsewhere. And even if you lay your cards on the table, she'll either continue to string you along, or she'll go back into her cave very, very quickly, in her emotional cave of, oh, actually, you know what, I'm actually never going to leave my boyfriend, I'm staying with him, and she just liked the attention all along. So, you know, you got to ask some difficult questions. And I spoke in a mindset section of my book that we are our questions, and sometimes you got to lean into the uncomfortable conversations with yourself in order to come out stronger the other side. The reason I love fitness so much is that when you lean into the pain of a workout, when you do those reps that you didn't think you could do, when you do that extra kilometer that you didn't think you could run, you get better as a result, and your body responds as a result. Your mindset's the exact same. When you ask these uncomfortable questions and you lean into that discomfort, and you start to realize what it is you really want, you end up coming out stronger out the other side. In the case of the gym, you build more muscle, or you lose more body fat, or you get fitter. In the case of your life, you end up being happier, and you feel a lot clearer and have more clarity on what it is that you do want in your life. So I would ask those questions, and hopefully anyone else that's been in that similar situation, I know this is something that comes up a lot, and the only thing that changes are the names. So anyone that's been in this position, anyone that is going through it at the minute, or anybody that goes through it in the future that can use this as a reference, hopefully this will help. So yeah, best of luck with that situation. Okay, that's everything from today's episode. So my website, briankeenfitness.com. If you want to get in contact with me on any of my programs, you can head over there. My Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram is all Brian Keane Fitness. My Snapchat's BrianK019. And if you're a GEA player, be sure to check out the GEA Lean Body Guide on my website, which is a free guide for nutrition, training, and supplements to help GEA players. And my other podcast, the GEA Lean Body Podcast. Be sure to head over there and subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening. Catch you all soon.